vastly different from our life here on Earth, but would that really be the case? A new speculative short story collection called Everyone on Mars has been released, and it contemplates a future where humans have successfully colonized the red planet, and it dives into the mental and physical impacts and challenges. It's a fascinating read, as it feels a lot more closer to home than the usual science fiction. Larry Buttrose is the author and joins us this morning to chat about Everyone on Mars. Thanks for joining me on The Record.
Hi, Fiona. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm sorry, a noisy truck just went by. That should be the last.
That's all right.
I'm parked somewhere pretty good. Okay, yeah. So, thank you. I'm interested to talk to you about my book.
So what made you decide to write speculative short stories on Mars and the future?
Well, it sounds like an author's cliche, but it really just happened. I've never written in that style before. I've published a couple of novels and, you know, poetry and non-fiction. The Lion book I did, the book that became Lion, the movie. I wrote one story, actually the last story, called The Society. And when I set that on Earth, and it was about a woman just alone in a house. And then when I finished the story, I was a bit dissatisfied with it. I thought there's more to this. And then slowly it evolved that would be on another world. The story's a bit otherworldly to begin with, and then I just took it on to another world, and that world became Mars. And then once that was in my mind, over the next 3 months, nearly all those stories came pouring out. And I wrote them all at once in April to July of 2022.
Oh, wow. Can you give us a brief overview of what some of the short stories are about?
Well, Elizabeth Farrelly, when she launched the book in Sydney, said, normally I don't like books and stories about writers, she said, but as it turns out, my two favourite stories in the book are actually about writers. The first story in the book is called Writer in Residence, and it's about a woman, a Cuban woman, who is sent to Mars as a writer in residence. And she's just knocked out, first of all, that she's on Mars. She can't believe that she's actually there when she arrives. And, of course, part of the job is reading works written by people living and working on Mars. And through that process, she realises that one of the people actually writes better than she has done in a very long time. And then there's a bit of a tragic ending to that story. The other story is called The Baroness, and it's about a British poet laureate who also is commissioned to write a suite of poems on Mars and comes back not having written anything. And the story, seemingly not having written anything, and the story is about what really happened to her on Mars and how she went AWOL on Mars because she found being in the main settlement on Mars, which I've called Elongate for obvious punny reasons, she found that too constricting, and so she broke away and went out onto Mars. But there's also stories set back on Earth. There's one called Yellow about a woman who's waiting for her husband to come back and can't bear the thought of any speck of Martian dust getting into the house and styles the house completely in blues, oceanic blues, to assert the Earth. And there's also a story called Science Fiction in which life is found on Mars and how this, in our current kind of crazy media situation, spirals out of control on Earth and eventually leads to a cataclysm.
It's a really interesting variety of characters and stories, majority taking place on Mars, but there are, like you were saying, a few taking place on Earth. Like you were saying, there's a poet, there's a couple going through a divorce, and of course the end of the world of Earth as we know it. Where did some of these ideas come from? Why did you decide to focus on some of those aspects?
Well, most of the stories came out really in this rush in 3 months, and why did those stories suggest themselves to me? I really can't say. I mean, where did A Horse with Good Manners come from? A story about two people in, seriously injured on Mars, and one of them is in a coma and has a in this coma state, he has this reflection of his childhood growing up and this department store that he used to go into, and in the process, in his dream, falls in love with a shop assistant in the supermarket, the old-fashioned supermarket called Benson's. So where do these stories come from? I really don't know. But that's like asking, well, what's a creative process? You don't really know. I finish a lot of my works and I read them and I think, who wrote this? It's very curious. It's a, when you're writing, when you're really in the zone, there's something else that takes over, and then later on you look at them and you wonder how I did that and why I did that and how I managed to put those threads together.
The book was a very interesting read because when we talk about living on Mars, it's usually very futuristic, but these stories felt very grounded and real world. Like you could imagine what these people are going through and very relate this situation to here on Earth. How important was that for you to make it very real world?
Very important to me. One, I worked very hard on the science. I had the science checked out by Robin Williams of The Science Show and by another fellow called David Flannery, who's Tim Flannery's son. David is one of the NASA scientist team that operates the Perseverance rover on Mars. So he's very clued in on the science. So I worked closely with the science and what our up-to-date knowledge of it is. For instance, the soil on Mars, in the movie The Martian, the soil of Mars is actually toxic. You can't just plant things in it and grow potatoes like happens in that. We now know that there is something that affects the human thyroid and is very toxic to us. Luckily, the soil can just be washed. So I looked at the problems of what it would really, really be like to live there. Well, one of the things is that it'd be very close quarters. So if you have a community on Mars, people would be living in tiny apartments. And, of course, you hear everyone else's life. You hear them fighting and, you know, screaming at each other or making love or, you know, snoring. So you hear these things. And it's a tight, cramped, sweaty, smelly community of people working on Mars as scientists and also in mining. Mining would be one of the first industries on Mars. Why? Because you need to build Mars. You need to build a community. You can't take the stuff that you need up there, like steel is too heavy and all of that. So you make it there. You know, and you can make jet fuel, rocket fuel up on Mars as well because there's water there. We now know there's a lot of water on Mars, frozen under the surface and at the poles. There's a lot of water. So there's no real impediment to us colonising Mars, but I wanted to evoke a real human community there, which is not glamorous at all. It would be very tough to live there.
Yeah,
And one of the stories, location, there's a couple who asked to buy an apartment off the plan on Mars. And there's two kinds, the cheaper one with more radiation or exposure, and there's the other ones underground in lava tubes where you're much more protected from radiation and from meteorite strikes. So, yes, to answer your question, I wanted to capture the sweaty closeness and visceral quality of what it'd be like to live in such a harsh environment.
And in a fair few of your stories, you focus on not only that enclosed environment, but also the psychological impacts of an isolated city and the challenges that come with it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, it's sort of, there is some knowledge out there about this now. Obviously, if people go to Mars, this place is impossibly distant from Earth. It's over 100 million kilometres from Earth. This is a huge distance, and it takes anywhere between 6 to 9 months to get there, depending on the relative positions of the two planets. Now, that's a hell of a time to get anywhere. And when you get to Mars, there are now NASA photographs of Earth from Mars. It's just this tiny, tiny blue dot. It's like the way we see Mars. Obviously, we see Mars as a tiny red dot. This is a tiny blue dot. That is home. That is where we come from. And to get back there is a very difficult journey. So the feeling of isolation is huge. It takes minutes even to get a message from Mars to Earth. So this is a isolation and alienation, feelings of enemy. All these things would be part of living on Mars. And, of course, one of the stories, the lore, is about people going through divorce on Mars. And there would be divorce on Mars. People would go there. If they formed a relationship or if they went with someone, the circumstances there could easily make them split up. What happens then? You know, there's a magistrate on Mars. That's that story, the law. But her basis of sort of authority is challenged by one of the people contesting the divorce. And so we find out about what the legal basis is for authority on Mars too.
So why do you think Mars is a dream destination for explorers and entrepreneurs and in science fiction?
Well, there's a whole lot of reasons. One is that we harbour a dream there might be life on Mars. We're now beginning to think it's not little green men and women. It's actually microscopic life. We're still discovering microscopic life on Earth, at the bottom of the oceans and in the substrata of the crust of the Earth. So there's no reason why, you know, the substrata of Mars couldn't reveal the most amazing secrets about life on Mars. So finding life on Mars is one thing, because we really want to know whether we're alone, whether, you know, mathematically it seems very highly likely that we're not the only form of life in the universe, but we might be. Who knows? It might just be a total Goldilocks miracle on Earth. So that's one of the things about it. I'm sorry, well, let's go back to what the question was. I'll answer the rest of it. What did you ask again?
Oh, just why do you think Mars is a dream destination for explorers and in science fiction?
Yeah, well, the other thing in contemporary fiction, of course, not old-fashioned science fiction, but in more contemporary fiction, we now know that Mars is probably the only other place, only other planet anyway, that we could colonise. Because Venus is simply too hot and acidic. It would be terribly difficult even to put machines on Venus. And we've got the moon. I mean, there are moons of other planets, but these, you know, this is Jupiter and Saturn. They're impossibly distant to get there. So really, if you're talking about rocky planets, Mercury is not really possible for obvious reasons. It's so close to the sun. So it really comes down to Mars. Mars is the only other planet we can go to. So if we want to extend humanity, if we want to take ourselves out of our and become biplanetary, and this is a dream that someone like Elon Musk, whatever people think of him, he's had this dream for a long time and he's worked very hard on sort of trying to get humanity off this planet into other planets to kind of extend our range. And there is something about that, about the human desire to keep moving. You know, there's lots of people who say, well, why go to Mars? Why go? Why go there when we've got so many problems on Earth? And why don't we fix these up first? Now, I answer that in the afterword. I say, well, humans have never operated that way. When we went to the New World, it wasn't like we fixed up the problems in the Old World. It wasn't like when the explorers went over to the Americas, which they thought was India, they fixed all the problems of Europe before they left. We don't operate that way as a species. We just keep moving and looking and then slowly perfecting everything or else letting it fall into disarray. That's the way we operate. We're a messy species.